Hello, this is Bob Proctor with lesson number 6 from the Lead the Field Seminar, Seed for Achievement. Earl Nightingale began this lesson by saying, "It is our intention that each of these messages be built upon a major principle, the proper use of which will result automatically in more successful living. In this one, I'm going to give you a principle which will substantially help you attain your personal and business goals, and even more important, will result in your achieving a peace of mind you may never before have experienced. And since it's the kind of principle it is, it would be well to get the whole family together for this message, particularly the children. Again, it seems that at least 95% of the people, maybe more, don't seem to know about this, at least not fully. So the person who does know has an enormous advantage. The seed for achievement is truth. Not necessarily the kind of truth we hear so much about, although that's important, but the kind of truth you don't hear much about, particularly these days. Truth means honesty, and the way in which I want to describe this kind of truth was perhaps best put by Shakespeare, when in Hamlet he has Polonius say, "And this above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day. Thou canst not then be false to any man." The kind of truth I want to talk to you about is inner truth, truth to yourself. The information that Earl just shared with us is so accurate, it's so perfect, and yet, unfortunately, as he mentioned, is virtually ignored by the masses. It's probably worth mentioning that ignored comes from the root ignorance, not knowing. People do not consciously and deliberately impede their own progress, regardless of how much it may appear that that is what they're doing. This is an excellent place to reintroduce and elaborate on the word praxis, which was first brought to your attention in the lesson Destiny and the Balance. Praxis, the integration of belief with behavior. If you were to ask the next 100 people you meet to read the first 5 or 6 paragraphs that we have just covered in this lesson of Seed for Achievement, I would go so far as to say that at least 99% of the people you polled would say, "Yes, I believe that's true." And yet, oddly enough, if we go back and review Earl's own lines, he said, "It seems that at least 95% of the people, maybe more, don't seem to know about this, at least not fully." He continued to say, "So the person who does know has an enormous advantage." The shocking reality is that of all the people who will tell you they believe what Earl Nightingale said, only 2 or 3% of the people have integrated this belief with their behavior. Although there are hundreds of tremendous lessons in this Lead the Field seminar, if this were the only one that you actually capitalized on, the rewards you would receive would exceed the scope of your imagination. In fact, Earl quotes Marabou later on in this lesson where he wrote, "If honesty did not exist, we ought to invent it as the best means of getting rich." Now, I want you to imagine the stick person concept of the mind and body. In the conscious mind, we have the concept, "I believe I can multiply my income." And yet, in the emotional mind, the subconscious, "I can't seem to earn more money." Now, that's going to put your body in a conflicting vibration. Why? Why haven't more people integrated this belief with their behavior? Well, you're looking for the answer to that question. You might also ask yourself why they don't integrate all other beliefs they have with their behavior. The answer to that question becomes obvious when you begin to understand the mind and how it works. We have been conditioned, genetically and environmentally, to live one way and then taught to live another. You might be thinking this must cause tremendous conflict in our lives, and of course it does. And the sad truth is that there are a great number of people who are so used to living with this conflict, they've accepted it as the norm. They don't even realize it is the cause of almost all of their problems. They have come to believe that other people, conditions, and circumstance are the cause of any problems they may be encountering. And unfortunately, it is only on rare occasions that the primary cause of these conflicts are properly addressed. You should be pleased to know this Lead the Field program deals with primary causes. When they are altered, results naturally follow. The results are frequently so dramatic that a person's life is actually transformed. Most people believe they are honest, and with most situations in life, they probably are. If a cashier in a store gave you too much money back when you purchased something, the great majority of people would bring it to the cashier's attention and give it back. If a good friend shared something with you in confidence and trusted that you would keep it in confidence, it is only on rare occasions that trust is betrayed. However, when it comes to being honest with ourselves about why we do what we do and why we don't do some of the things we'd like to do, it's a different matter. Most people have become extremely effective at lying to themselves. If you were to survey many of the most effective people you know, if you were able to get into their mind and see how they operate, you would find they are masters at being honest with themselves and often referred to as being mentally strong. Because they are continually developing the talents and abilities that lie dormant within all of us. Earl Nightingale continued with the seed for achievement by saying, "You know, we hear a lot these days about the conquest of outer space, and that's fine. But as a radio listener wrote to me one day, there is little we cannot accomplish as persons if we manage the conquest of inner space." Being truthful with ourselves means the responsibility of making the best use of what we have. And what do we have? We have our mind, our abilities, our unique and individual talents, and time. These are our possessions. This is really an immense amount of wealth that belongs to each of us, and it's the investment of our wealth which will determine our rate of return. And, as with the ownership of wealth of any kind, it is left to us, as persons, to decide what we'll make of it. We can squander it until it's all gone. We can spend it in a helter-skelter, hit-or-miss fashion without much purpose or meaning. Or we can invest it with intelligence and purpose and receive an abundant return. A return which will more than provide for ourselves and our loved ones all the years of our lives. The choice is ours, and it is here that personal honesty and integrity come into the picture. Now let's think about what Earl was saying. There are numerous definitions of integrity. I'm sure you'll find this definition you're about to receive as useful and accurate as any. It incorporates the concepts of personal honesty. A person is in integrity when their thoughts, their feelings, and actions are all in harmony. Give serious consideration to the conditioning that has taken place in a person's subconscious mind. It will soon become apparent that because of this conditioning, a person's thoughts and feelings and actions are frequently not in sync. Now, we'll come back and address that at another point in this lesson. But let's go back to what Earl was saying about seed for achievement. He said, "For a moment, let's remind ourselves again of the great law behind everything in the universe, the law of cause and effect. For every cause, there will be an equal effect. If we make good use of our mind, abilities, and talents, this will become apparent in our outer lives. If we make the best use of our time, this too will give us a great advantage, because certainly we know that scarcely 5, perhaps only 2 or 3 people in 100 really put their time to anywhere near its potential good use." This is being true to ourselves, because in the last analysis, we are the only ones from whom we can steal time, talent, and ability. It's taking the time we have been given and put it to our own good use. It's taking whatever abilities and talents we possess as separate and unique persons and putting them to their best use. In short, making the best use of what we have in the time we are given to use it. Sounds simple. Truth is always simple and uncomplicated. And here again, we are placing ourselves above competition by doing what the majority do not do. We are understanding something the great majority of people do not know. Here's the foundation upon which every great career has been built: integrity, truth, and honesty. are bases for success. Let's look at some facts. Success has nothing to do with the size of the brain. The largest brain on record was the brain of an idiot. The smallest, the brain of Anatole France, who won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1921. Some of the world's greatest people in every field are or were short, bald, and fat. Some tall and skinny. Some brilliant and well-educated. Some had little or no formal schooling. So the person destined for greatness cannot always be spotted on the street, nor does that person always get the vote of their school graduating class as the one most likely to succeed. But truly successful people all have one thing in common. They all understand, consciously or unconsciously, the law of cause and effect. They wisely work with it instead of trying to work against it. Although most people will give lip service to honesty, they're really not at all sure about it. With the great majority, it's a matter of expediency. It's more expedient to realize a quick profit in some way by not disclosing the whole truth or by shading it a bit. Well, they'll hide it a bit. Why? Because they live on a short-term, instant gratification basis. They don't see living as a long-term arrangement. They forget, or don't know, about what I like to call the unfailing boomerang. Unfailing boomerang. Think of the number of times you have felt yourself being pulled in one direction, while at the same time, your intellect was telling you the opposite direction was the true course of action to follow. This sort of mental conflict is not a modern phenomenon brought on by our fast-changing world. The truth has always had a way of shifting under pressure. It is often just as hard to tell the truth as it is to hide from it. 500 years before the life of Christ, Sophocles, the Greek dramatist, gave us the answer to this dilemma when he said, "Truth is the strongest argument." Situations of this nature arise daily, and unfortunately with most people, the conditioning wins over the truth. They give in to that strong subconscious pull rather than do or say what their intellect knows is the truth. For example, a person could be in a social situation where someone may be criticizing another individual who's not present. They know the criticism is not well-founded, but rather than speak up in the person's defense, they remain quiet. This happens time and time again because most of us have been conditioned to be agreeable and not make waves. The person in question may even nod in agreement without saying anything. Cut it any way you want. We know this is a form of dishonesty. To thine own self be true. As we go through this lesson, in paragraph after paragraph, most of us have past situations triggered in our mind. We truly understand what Earl Nightingale is sharing with us, and it becomes more and more apparent the strength of the grip that the subconscious conditioning has upon our words, our feelings, and our actions. This lesson can serve as a catalyst for both you and I to muster up all the strength that God gave us and make an irrevocable decision that from this point forward, truth will reign in the decisions we make. Now, to continue with Earl Nightingale, every time a person does something dishonest, whether it's small or large, whether it's stealing a pair of pliers from the plant or embezzling $10,000, whether it's selling themselves short by not making full use of their time, talent, and abilities, they're throwing the boomerang. Now, how far it will travel, no one knows. How great or how small a circle it will traverse, only time will tell. But it will eventually, it must finally, it will inevitably come around behind that person to deliver its never-failing and painful blow. Yes, honesty is good business. In fact, Mirabeau wrote, "If honesty did not exist, we ought to invent it as the best means of getting rich. It's the only way on earth to real and lasting success of any kind. Either we're convinced of this with every fiber of our being, totally, completely, or we are not. If we don't know this, by the time we're adults, we deserve every knock we get. In fact, if we didn't deserve them, we wouldn't get them." All we have to do under every circumstance is ask ourselves, is this true? And is this honest? And then go ahead with the happy realization that we've taken care of the cause and the effect will take care of itself. You and I know that living successfully is a matter of forming the right habits, one of the most important of which is this business of honesty in everything we do. And yet, do you know that each year, in every country in the world, employees take home billions of dollars worth of unauthorized company merchandise or property? And it's estimated that the same amount is taken, but undetected and not reported for many reasons. This is a grand total in the billions and billions of dollars stolen from employers. And yet, it's seldom even thought of in this way by the average employee who helps themselves. But the monetary loss from company thefts is nothing compared to the loss from another kind of theft. The theft of productivity, wasting time. In both cases, it at first appears that only the employer suffers. But this is not really true. The person, him or herself, is hurt most. They're stealing productive time from their company. Yes, and while this hurts, the company will not likely fail because of that person. More important is the fact that the employee is stealing opportunity from him or herself, thereby holding themselves back, limiting themselves. As a result, that person grows smaller. They fail unless and until they wake up. Now, do you know, I think this is a good place for a little introspection. Everything covered to this point has caused you to take a look at yourself, your world, your habitual way of dealing with the truth. Each of us has an innate awareness that there's room for improvement in our lives. We know we can do better than we're doing. On a scale of 1 to 10, mark where you stand and then where you would like to stand. Further on in this lesson, we'll discuss the changes you may want to make to bring your life into harmony with where you want to be on a scale of 1 to 10. Now, Earl continues here by saying, consider this for a moment. The most effective counter to worldwide tyranny and subjugation is free world industry. We all know this. Our only hope of success, of winning the hearts and mind of the world's peoples, is in helping them raise their productivity through free enterprise and thus improving their standard of living. But if we're content to give less than our best, we're actually working against ourselves, against our way of life. When we fail to give honest measure to others and to ourselves, we're crippling the very thing which has given us the highest standard of living and the most enlightened society on earth, our very freedom. Today, workers in the free world earn many times more than a worker in a closed society, and their standard of living makes them kings by comparison. And you would imagine they'd feel this is worth working for. Well, let's hope that enough of us do feel this way to make the difference. The average person in our society is paid for about 40 hours of productive time a week. This leaves that person with 128 hours a week to do with as they please. Never before in the history of humanity have we had so much free time. By giving everything they have, as much of their mind, talents, and abilities, to at least these 40 hours, a person can make a really worthwhile and substantial contribution to their company, career, or profession, and as a result to themselves, their family, the nation, and the free world. By giving their honest best during working hours, they'll be building the security which lasts a lifetime. Do you know, I have thought about that many times since I began studying this program, and Earl Nightingale's right. You'll be building that inner security, and as he says, and will reap a rich and abundant reward. They will know a wonderful feeling of worth, of value, and of peace of mind this inevitably brings. This is the way to really live. I think it's true to say that required working hours are for earning a living. When we give to our work beyond what is required, we are really giving to ourselves, our personal growth, our career success. Our greatest enemy has never changed, and its name is ignorance. And the greatest ignorance of all is the mistaken belief that we can never receive more than we earn. Sooner or later, there will be an accounting. We're throwing the boomerang. You know, while Earl Nightingale pointed out that our greatest enemy has never changed, it is and always will be ignorance. It is also the only competition we're ever going to face. However, we must clearly understand that there is absolutely no allowance made for ignorance. This is definitely an orderly universe, and what we put out in thoughts, feelings, and actions definitely comes back. There are millions of people every day wondering why this or that is happening to them. They fail to realize that in their ignorance, they have ordered it, and by the law of their being, it is being delivered right on schedule. And while we may not be able to point at the specific cause of these unwanted happenings, if we understand the law, we will know that we have attracted them. We are either consciously or deliberately choosing our thoughts, our words, and our actions, or the deep-rooted conditioning that we refer to as paradigms in the lesson on greener pastures are in control. These paradigms are what cause many people to relinquish or let go of what they know is true. Take a moment and revisit the model of the mind and how the paradigm was first developed. You know your conscious mind has the ability to accept or reject ideas. Your subconscious, that lower part of the model, has no ability to reject. Now here's the point. In your little life, when you were just an infant, when you first arrived on the scene, your conscious mind did not develop, so your subconscious mind was like an open cup. And everything going on around you, all the thoughts, the feelings, and the actions, the honesty and the dishonesty, was going right into your subconscious mind. You see, we truly are the product of somebody else's habitual way of thinking. Their thoughts are programmed into our mind. And although our intellect knows the difference, it's not our intellect that controls our behavior. It would be a wise investment of your time to reflect back upon the environment that you were in for the first 5 or 6 years of your life. Think of the people you were surrounded by. What was their lifestyle like? What did they work at? Don't get caught up in the concept of whether they were good or bad people. Did they make the best use of their time and talent? Were they involved in programs such as this that would help them develop their potential? And while you are mentally reviewing this period of your life, you must realize that you are an extension of that energy. You are the product of their habitual way of living. They are the ones who are responsible for the formation of your paradigm. But it's also important for you to remember that you are responsible for changing it. You see, thought energies flowing to and through you, and it is neither positive or negative. You can make anything out of it you want. The nature of the idea you build will have a tendency, though, to be influenced by your subconscious conditioning. In other words, if you've been conditioning to shade the truth a little bit, to cut corners, if that's the conditioning, that's what your conscious mind is just going to start to do. We have to stop and ask ourselves, am I being pulled in the right direction? Now, you were truly given the freedom to form whatever ideas you choose. There's absolutely no one and no thing that can influence your thoughts without your permission. You must realize the thoughts and ideas that we entertain consciously or in our conscious mind have been formed from pure, unadulterated energy that flows to and through us. As it enters our consciousness, it is neither positive or negative. We make it what it is. The mental pull that you feel to choose one thought or idea over another is the paradigm. Realize there are generations of habits that are programmed into every cell of your being, and they'll guide every step of your life if you permit them. It is vital to your success to remember that free will takes precedent over any and all conditioning. And where it may cause a respectable amount of discomfort, to follow what you know is true, it's the only road to a great future. You see, when the thoughts come to your mind, and you have these thoughts, that's not true, you know, that's not honest, I don't believe that. But then, you know, we start to shade it, no one's getting hurt, do it anyway, go along with them. This form of compromising is so common that it has become an acceptable way of life by the masses. It is, however, a violation of the law, and someone will always be hurt. If it is you who is doing the compromising, you can be certain you will be the one who is hurt. It requires tremendous discipline and an irrevocable commitment to change that conditioning. But those who do have most certainly planted the seed for achievement. Now, Earl Nightingale continued, "The wonderful thing about this law, cause and effect, the boomerang, is that it's just as unfailing when we operate on the right side of it. Just as it can never fail to punish us when we're dishonest with others or with ourselves, it will heap upon us the abundance we seek, the good life, if we'll play fair. There's no limit on this. It's almost never too late. For just as the punishment always seems to be greater than the crime, the rewards always seem to be out of all proportion to our proper acts." So let's summarize. What do we mean by putting truth to work for us? It means willingness to perform at our best during the time we should be performing at our best. This gives comfort and a feeling of well-being to our leisure time. Our rest has been earned. We know we'll move ahead because we will simply be too remarkable, too unusual and outstanding to go unnoticed for very long. This is as it should be, for there has never been a time when the outstanding person is more sorely needed. It means the willingness to keep an open mind, to look for truth all the days of our lives, and to be ready to toss our most cherished beliefs into the trash can if we can be shown something that comes closer to the truth. It's knowing that there's always a better way, and a better way than that, and so on, and looking in everything we do for these better ways of conducting ourselves. You know, Earl Nightingale was right. Being honest with ourselves does go a long way. I'm going to ask you to stop the program for a moment and get involved in an exercise. I want you to pick two or three examples where you know that your paradigm is winning over what you know is the truth, and as a result, you're compromising your best behavior. Now, you might take the example that we've already used when you hear someone being criticized. You know it's not the truth, but you just sit back and you don't speak up. Or let's take another example. Let's take a time when you're involved in a project at work and you're settling for results that you know are inferior to those that you're capable of. Now, build a couple of specific concepts in your mind where you know that your paradigm is winning. And then I want you to make a decision as to a correction you're going to make, how you're going to do it different. And at the same time, think of the rewards that are going to accrue to you because you do turn this new behavior into a habit. Go ahead and think about that right now. Now, I truly hope you've picked a couple of excellent examples, and I want to wish you all the best in forming your new habit. Do you know, Earl Nightingale continued by saying, "It's realizing that a person who does not read is no better off than one who cannot, and that a person who does not continue to learn to grow as a person is no better off than one who cannot. And it's understanding that we must walk with truth every day of our lives if we're to reap the abundant harvest. The greatest joy a human being can know is the joy of accomplishment. Think how really great this job becomes when we're making constantly growing use of our mind, our talents, and our abilities. Think of your life as a plot of ground to be seeded. It can only return to you what you first give to it. And what do you have to give? You have real wealth. You have a human mind, the greatest single agency ever to appear on earth. You have far more abilities than you have ever used, and far more talent than you probably can imagine. And you have time, the one thing which is completely beyond the control of man, time, which cannot be saved, stopped, nor held back for even an instant. Make full use of these riches while you have them. Why wait to say, 'I wish I could do it all over again'? There is no second chance. Use truth as your guide, and your plot of ground will return to you and yours an abundance that will amaze and delight you. There may be bad days, days when you feel uneasy, worried, or depressed. They're a part of life. Should they come, let me suggest that you remember a quotation which has helped me and a lot of other people overcome some rough spots. It's by Dean Briggs, and it goes like this. Do your work, not just your work and no more, but a little more for the lavishing sake. that little more which is worth all the rest. And if you suffer as you must, and you doubt as you must, do your work. Put your heart into it, and the sky will clear, and then out of your very doubt and suffering will be born the supreme joy of life. This quote by Dean Briggs is one of my favorites. I've liked it from the first moment I heard it, and many years ago committed it to memory. There have been numerous times when I'm in the process of forming a new habit that my old paradigm has been fighting feverishly to get me to forget it. I would have such thoughts as, it's not necessary, forget it, let it go, start it tomorrow. It was at those times this quote comes back to my mind. I mentally and sometimes verbally repeat it. My attitude would shift and I'd dig in, as Briggs said. I would do my work, a little more, for the lavishing sake. You are now at the halfway point in this Lead the Field seminar. I want to recommend that you pick a specific hour each day. You might refer to it as your creative study hour or your moments for brainstorming. Give it a title and then make it a part of your life. You may, on occasion, invite another person to join you in this hour, where you will brainstorm. This hour is set aside for research and development. Its sole purpose is to enable and inspire you to bring more of your rich resources to the surface. I've often recommended to people that they join the 6 o'clock club. That's where you are up bright and early, rested, and your mind is clear. You do not have the weight of the daily activities resting on your mind. You'll be fresh and ready to roll. Keep in mind, if you have not already formed the habit of setting 1 hour aside for your own personal research and development, that your old paradigm, which is deeply rooted conditioning, will put up a tremendous battle and attempt to prevent you from engaging on a continuous basis with this new productive behavioral pattern. Choose your hour now. Commit to the concept and begin today. Now, I'm going to suggest that you write out your commitment. And you put on there that my signature is my commitment to allocate the following hour and then put the hour in every day for my own research and development. I understand my old conditioning will attempt to prevent me from honoring this commitment. However, I have made a decision that is irrevocable. I am doing this. Sign it and date it. And I might even take it a step further. Put it on a card, carry it in your pocket, and read it as often as possible every day. You'll get the idea of a commitment sunk deeply in the treasury of your subconscious mind, and I guarantee you, it will alter the way you live. This is Bob Proctor, and thank you.